This podcast is brought to you by St. Joseph's Episcopal Church in Boynton Beach, Florida, in the United States of America. You can find us at stjoesweb.org. Come visit us when you are in town.
Let us pray. Gracious God, we ask that you would pour the knowledge of your presence in our hearts and in our minds. Set our souls on fire with love for you. Amen. Please be seated. So fall is here. See, I guess in 5 days, officially, it'll be here on the 21st. And this time of the year always reminds me of school starting and how I felt when I was just starting school, or when I was a teacher, how I felt with a new class or new kids coming in. And I was reminded the other day of how I felt a few years ago when my husband Scott and I took our son Andrew to college, and we said our tearful goodbyes for, you know, first time he was going off, waved to him as he stood under the tree in his dorm. He had a huge smile on his face. I was not so happy. And we left, and in the next days and weeks that followed, we had to figure out, now who am I? Who do you say that I am now that I don't have a child at home anymore? Who do you say that I am now that I'm in college? Anytime we have life-shattering or life-enhancing situations, we begin to navigate a new normal. I still remember now 3 years ago when my older son, little boy, was born. And I remember being there for the birth, and just seconds after birth, him holding his son and gazing into his eyes, and that little baby gazing back into his eyes, just like the newborn that I saw in the back, Sky was doing earlier today, gazing into each other's eyes. And I couldn't help but think that they were also navigating. Who are you? Who am I? Am I your father? Am I your child? All without words, all in the unseen. And we all do this when we lose a loved one, or when we get married, when we lose a job, or when we have a new job. We begin to navigate new areas of our lives. Who do you say that I am now? This past Thursday, there was a memorial service for astronaut Neil Armstrong at Washington National Cathedral. And having worked there, I had to watch the service and see all the little ins and outs of it. But I couldn't pay attention to all that because the service was so beautiful. And the Bishop of Washington, Marianne Edgar Buddy, gave a sermon. And in it, she talked about this amazing man and all that he stood for. And she said, each of us has in our lives at least one moment of insight, an otherworldly, time-stopping experience that somehow succeeds in getting through to us. The insight that, if we let it, will carry us through and set the course for the rest of our life. It'll mold our identity. And she said that in reading all of the public comments and accolades for Neil Armstrong, that everybody was positive that it was when he walked on that moon as the first man who ever did so, and walked on the moon for 2.5 hours. Can you imagine? And certainly it had to be that that was his defining moment that steered his life for the rest of time. Well, she proposed that maybe not, because of the following writings. She figured that it wasn't so much his walking on the moon, but when he looked out of the spacecraft window back at Earth. Listen to what he writes. And this is Neil Armstrong, and I quote, "It suddenly struck me," this is as he's looking out the window, "that that tiny pea, pretty and blue, was the Earth. I put up my thumb and shut one eye, and my thumb blotted out the whole planet. I didn't feel like a giant. I felt very, very small." And then later, in a commencement speech that he made in 1970, he said this, It's a peculiar sensation to watch the Earth sink away and become smaller and smaller. During a trip to the moon, you see that the Earth is, in fact, a three-dimensional globe, and you appreciate the brilliant colors, the hues of the oceans and the whites of the clouds, the little bit of green that you see along the shorelines, and the river basins soon disappearing. The geographic features fade, leaving only the continental forms as you depart farther and farther from the Earth. No national boundaries can be seen. And as the globe becomes smaller and smaller, you remember that half of the population are hungry and two-thirds live in poverty. To solve the problem of feeding this population and protecting the planet is going to take an international approach far beyond any cooperative effort ever seen in history. I suppose we have to ask ourselves whether international cooperation on this scale is even possible. End quote. He would go on to be a huge proponent about caring for this Earth, this fragile Earth, our island home. All of you should have received cards and pencils when you came in the door. If not, our ushers are ready to give you one if you need it. Do you all have pencil and the card you received when you came in? We're going to do a little exercise. If you don't, raise your hand and they'll bring you one. I put some over here for you guys. There should be six. Let me bring you. I have one more. I was thinking there were six of you. There's seven. I think they're in the back seats there if you guys would pass them. Okay, so on these cards, and I'll just give you a minute to do it. They're back there. I'd like you to write down five statements in the time you have. If you can do more, that's fine. Five I am statements. So I am a poet, or I am a teacher, I am a mother, I am a daughter, whatever you write. But make sure you don't use ditto marks. Write the whole thing out. I am a photographer, whatever. Okay, I'll give you a minute to do that. All right, now looking at that list, no matter how many you have, cross out all but three. Okay, now cross out one more. And one more. Did I say too many? You should have one left. Cross out everything except for one, however many that is. All right? Now, with that one statement, cross off everything but I am and put a period after I am, so that you're left with just I am, period. When Moses was in the wilderness and he saw the burning bush and he was told to go free the exile people down in Egypt, and he said, "Who should I say sent me?" God said, "I am that I am. Tell them I am sent you." We are intimately connected with I am. And as we get to know that, little by little by little, we begin to know, like Neil Armstrong did, how we are being defined, what our identity is in God, and in our connection to something far greater than us. It was a gentleman that came to see me this week, and we were talking about a different subject, but in the course of our conversation, in fact, we did it right here in the church. I was up in the loft working, and he came in. I didn't know he was coming. And we sat right here and talked for probably an hour. In the course of that conversation, he said that he had had a horrific experience. I asked him, by the way, permission to tell the story. He had had an experience where he died, and he was brought back with good doctors and nurses, he was brought back to life. He had had a mild pneumonia. He'd gone to the doctor. He received a medication that is a wonderful medication for most people, but one in 500,000 have such severe reaction to it with something called necrotizing pancreatitis that they die. And he was one of those people. He was in intensive care for 3 months, flat on his back, tubes everywhere. He couldn't turn over because he had so much going on. And he had to have one surgery after the other. And finally, the doctors told him that he was terminal, that there was no hope, that he was either going to die in the intensive care or he was going to go to hospice. And so he became despondent and depressed and suicidal. He even had a plan. He said, he told me that he knew that if he could make it out of that bed, and he knew that he could, he'd make it to the window of the fourth floor and he could go out head first, that he could consider it done. And then he had a vision. He said, I'm a little embarrassed to tell you this. He said, you're going to think I'm crazy. And I said, no, I probably won't. And he said, I had this vision of my dad, who had, his father had died, sitting on a cloud. And God was sitting next to him. And his dad was saying, and in a very English way, he was saying, you will bloody well not die. By Christ, you will live. By Christ, you will live. And then he looked at me and he said, I'm sorry, Reverend, for cussing. I said, well, maybe your father actually meant by Christ, you will live. And he, I don't know that he bought it, but he said, well, maybe. And I said, well, by the way, what did God look like? And he said, he looked an awful lot like my father. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, well, what was he doing? And he said, he was cheering him on, saying, you tell him, you tell him, you tell him. He will bloody well not die. You tell him. He's going to live. And he did. And that was 2 years ago. 8 surgeries and 2 more to go. And he looked and he said, and you know what? I know now why I'm here. I'm here now to help other people heal and get better when they are in critical situations. I know that. And his eyes filled up with tears as he told me. For he had discovered his own identity. And he said, and you know, in a weird way, I'm really glad this happened. I know that's going to sound weird to you too. And I said, no, lots of people feel that way. He said, I will never be the same. The skies are never bluer. And I see people in a way that I've never seen them before. Now, I don't know if this man is a Christian, but I know, certainly, he is Christ-like. He is Christ-like and has been radically transformed. In our gospel today, Jesus asks Peter, who do you say that I am? Peter says, well, you're the Messiah. And then Jesus proceeded to tell him that, yes, he was the Messiah, but that he would then have to die on the cross and suffer along the way greatly and then rise again on the third day. And Peter never heard the rise again part, I don't think. He stopped and he said, no, not like that. We have it all figured out. All the people who have been prophesying about the Messiah know, don't you know, Jesus, that the Messiah is going to be this skilled politician, this great lawgiver like Moses, this great ruler, king like David. Don't you know? And now you're saying you're going to be a suffering servant and die? I don't think so. He rebuked Jesus, in other words. And then Jesus said, get thee behind me, Satan. And that word Satan can be anything as that stumbling block in our lives, the error of our ways. He said, get behind me, Satan, if you're going to talk that way. Get behind me. Probably meant follow me. I'm not following you. Get behind me. And then he turned to the crowd, as he turned to all of us now, and says, if you want to become my followers, take up your cross. Any burden. Just like that gentleman and his illness, take up your cross and follow me. Even in the suffering of our lives, even in the new experiences of our lives, even if our marriages are troubled, even if we are struggling with keeping on the wagon if we're an addict, even if we are living our lives with such joy that we don't know what else to do but shout it from the rooftops. Take up your cross and follow me. And as we do so, we become grounded and grounded. And we get to a point where we can experience or take the time in a regular way to get quiet and experience the stillness of Christ, to experience that love that God has for us. And little by little, we too are going to discover our own unique expressions, and we can pray for that to be given to us. It doesn't mean we have to be in intensive care for 3 months. We can learn from other people, and it's right here, and the Anointed One still speaks. Listen to these words of the Lord from Psalm 46, verse 10. I invite you to close your eyes as I read this, and then we'll have a time of shared silence before our prayers. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know Be still Be